Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is July 14th?
I think it's 15th. It's tax day. No, it's 14th. It's 14th.
14th.
I got a tax day reminder.
Yeah. Actually, I did my joints. I finalized my
you
joints.
You did them on time, didn't you?
No. I was doing them on time, and then when they gave the extension, I was like,
yeah. You were like, yeah. Yeah.
But God bless my accountant, Arthur Bader, Artie Bader from the Bronx, because he beat me in the head. Jeff, it's your accountant, Artie. You still haven't sent me your stuff.
I love it.
So I sent him my stuff and everything. So I'm, it's funny, like when you turn your taxes in, you know, and I know you told me you have some tax issues at point. And so have I. I'm not saying that to point fingers, because I definitely, a couple years, I think I said on the show, I didn't do them a couple years or whatever. So, like, now when I turn them in, you know, I'm all caught up and everything. But, you know, but when I turn them in now, I feel good. Like, yeah.
I did my shit.
I got my shit done. I did my shit. Hey! You know what I'm saying? But we were actually talking right before the show started offline about how this summer of not being able to kind of go to a beach or go to a resort or go travel or
man.
Do the shit that you do in the summertime, cook out, it's closing in on us. And I mean, I'm sure it's like that in every city, but in New York City, I mean, New York is New York. And so it starts to close in on you after a while. Even though it's a big city, I need to get out the city.
And this is New York is, and it's also like, yeah, like you said, most of us, almost everybody gets out of the city at some point during the summer. Because summers in New York, when we hit August, it's pretty much unbearable here to be outside.
Hot as shit. It's hot as shit. It's about to be hot as shit. Like
right now, yeah.
And Wednesday on, it's supposed to be bonkers.
It's hot and muggy. Like, I'm actually almost glad it's so disgusting outside, because any notions I was having of feeling like I needed to be outside are gone. Like, honestly, I really only do outside really strong in June in New York, because that's when the weather is...
It's good,
it's bearable, but like, and then like once in August, once in July. But first of all, like, there's mad usually outdoor concerts, outdoor events, outdoor activities. Mm-hmm. That's been dead. But also, like, you know, most of us, especially entertainment industry folks, we go on vacation in August. Yeah. Like, you're going somewhere. And
Martha's Vineyard shit is dead. Yeah. Like, all that shit is dead.
Yeah, like people who own on the Vineyard are out there. And people who own in the Hamptons are out there, but like the rentals are sky high. Nobody's not regular people ain't going out there.
God,
right?
God.
And it's like, so
you can't do any of the islands or Mexico and stuff because you have to be quarantined coming in. So if you're doing it, you would have to go
for like a month. You know,
yes,
like,
I'm saying, yeah, exactly. Because the first week or two, you're gonna be sitting in some, you know, sleeping on a cot. You know,
in some random hotel room.
Yeah, and then coming back, you're going to get quarantined again coming into the States, you know.
So some
countries might not even let you come in, period.
Some you can't even go. I know the rich white folks are mad because it's Mediterranean season for them and they can't get in.
Yeah.
We were saying before we got on that, like, I'm so jealous of my friends who have, like, a terrace or a balcony. And, like, if I had a terrace right now, I would have a baby pool outside that bitch and just be sitting out there.
I've seen some people with the baby pool on the street.
Yeah.
Last week, I rode my bike by there.
I'm not mad.
There was a couple little kids in the pool, and mama and them had their feet in the water. And trust me, I was tempted to be like, hey, can I get a little corn over here?
No, I was trying to figure out, like, can I get a baby pool and take it to the park? But then I was like, where am I going to get just to put my feet in? But I was like, where am I going to get the water from, et cetera? Yeah. So I've been looking at hotels, you know, in the area. I was looking, like, in the Hudson Valley and in Long Island.
Trust state.
Yeah, looking for, like, a 4-star joint that also has a pool that's open, an outdoor pool that's open to guests right now. So I found something in Westbury. I think I'm going to go there for the weekend and just chill, because also I'm fucking tired. Like, I've been working a lot. since like week four of quarantine. And it just, even with the shift in schedules being different, it actually makes, it actually almost drained me more than working normally, because like you lose track of time, you lose track of kind of like what you're supposed to be doing. Things feel a lot more hectic. You have less like reserves to draw on because your body's in PTSD mode. And I just need a, my body's like, bitch, we need some to lay out. We need some vitamin D and some fucking water. And so Sean was telling us that even his non-swimming ass got in his pool, which he never does.
Yeah, I get it. I like, I think I might have been in my pool shit like 8 times. We've been here 15
total. Total, nigga.
I believe it.
Shit, one of them times I had to jump in there to save a little nigga.
Oh, I remember that. Right. I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, you know. So, but yeah, I jumped in the other night, and you know, it was, you know, cool, man. We've been using the back, as you know, mostly. Like I told y'all before, you know, the neighborhood kids, they usually come and I let them play ball. But we're going to have to tamper that down a little bit.
Right.
Okay.
Cause we out there now too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
a couple times I had to come in and had to, you know, Mr. Sean had to come and shut it down.
Y'all got to get up out of here now.
Y'all going home.
I'm going to let y'all finish this game. But after this game, you got to go.
That's definitely what I said.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I can't run it back now.
I can't run. Yeah, exactly. After this game, y'all got to go. It's even bug, because as y'all know, I ride my bike and I do Central Park a lot. And even it's even bug to ride the park, because, you know, at the north end of the park is the pool. And it's bug to ride past the pool because there's no water in the pool. It's not even no water in it. It's
just, and it's usually your pool would be jam
flooded. Because that pool's huge. First of all, it's massive.
Right. Which is why I think we've talked about on here, like, you go to one public pool and you go early. I have a city pool right next to me and I just don't go because there's literally it's just mad bodies.
And the pool in Mount Morris Park, I guess I'm giving away secrets now if it ever comes open again.
You said it before.
The pool at Mount Morris Park, yeah, doesn't get that crowded for some reason.
Because it's kind of hidden.
It's kind of hidden, yeah, because it's above, it's high, like you can't see it from the street, so you wouldn't even kind of know. But it's interesting because the north end of Central Park is, you know, the Harlem section. And previous to COVID, it would be people there, but now it's flooded all the time. People on the grass, because again, there's no options, there's no other parks.
Right.
You know, they just opened up the playgrounds. They just put the basketball rims back up. So I guess that'll kind of, you know, loosen the crowd up a little bit. But back to what you were saying now. Yeah, like I want to get out the city, man. This is like, it's too much. It's just become,
closing in. A change of locale. I need to just be outside in the air without a whole bunch of people around. I need at least the illusion. Like, it's funny because, you know, people be like, well, you've been in your house. What are you taking a vacation from your own house for? But when you've been in your house all this time, you still feel like I need a change of
setting.
I need a change of setting in this bitch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw this cat. Then we'll move on. I saw this cat that I go to the same gym. If I don't even know if the gym is ever going to open again. But anyway, I was riding past him. I saw him. So I turned over and talked for a minute. And he was saying how, bikes, and Malcolm told me this too, like, you can't even find bikes in a lot of these stores now because everybody's buying bikes as a replacement to doing, you know, the moving around. So even the bike shit is tight now. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just crazy. Let's move on. How's everybody doing otherwise?
I'm good. Yeah, we good.
Just kind of I'm in that air space too. It's kind of like, look, I'm healthy, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's weird. I think the thing is that now it's like I realized that I was actually having some anxiety. I don't know if anxiety might be too strong a word, but some trepidation about things reopening because we've been in this long enough so that at this point, going back to old routines would feel awkward. Like, those routines would not feel comfortable to me.
Like getting on the train.
Yeah, like getting on the train, like hopping, like, you know, running errands in Midtown, like just going shopping, like in a clothing store. I can't even, you know, so it's like the idea, even now, like I noticed that, you know, a lot of the restaurants around the city obviously have, as in order to open back up, created outdoor dining spaces if they didn't already have them. And I think there's like a city grant to do it. So like Melba's has a whole outdoor area now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, maybe I'll go to Melba's. But even that was like, you know, I was just like, there is no, I've stopped saying after, you know, I've stopped saying,
ain't no after.
It's no after. It's like, yeah. It's like there's next, but there's not after, you know, exactly. There's going to be a transition into something, but yeah. I realize, and even as like, you know, states are going into upticks and some places are just putting their mask orders in place and all this other stuff. I'm just like, yeah, this is normal for me now. Like this is normal for me now. And I really don't, I think that, so because this is normal for me now, this part isn't stressing me out. But the idea now of having to move past this and go back into like the quote unquote world is stressing me out a little
Absolutely.
Bit. Because I just don't trust it.
I saw, I don't know if you saw it too, I saw a couple stories where they're saying, again, all these little things that you don't kind of think about. In New York, and I guess this is other cities too, but obviously New York has this massive rat population. And those rats basically, most of the rats subsist on the food that gets thrown on the ground or the food that restaurants put out at night and they go into the bags or whatever.
Right.
It's kind of like a constant food source for rats and other type of vermin in the city. Like no matter how hard we try to, you know, bag it or whatever. And I'm not, you know, sanitation men do as best they can, but
there's a lot,
but now that's dead. That food source that was constantly there for those rats is gone. So the rats are cannibalizing each other and obviously becoming very aggressive. So what I read is that now that when with the outdoor seating, rats are like running over people's legs, trying to get to the food because they smell the food.
Y'all should have seen. I visibly flinched. Mm-hmm.
Previous to the last, I guess, 3 weeks or a month or so, there was no outdoor eating anywhere. It was just to go. So there was no food smells. But now it's summer, people eating out. So the rats are smelling food and they're coming out because they're starving. They're literally starving.
Right.
Because of that food that they normally had to get with. So it's all these things. And that story is like in the daily news. That story is like in the daily news. Like it's not like some like.
Right. No, I believe it. I totally believe it. And you just discouraged me from outdoor dining. But it's like, because if that were to happen to me, I actually think I would faint. I think I would faint.
I would respect that.
A New York City rat? Oh, hell.
I would respect that.
Fucking no. I would just faint. I would just pass out. Somebody would have to come give me some smelling salts, something. I just can't. Oh, my God.
Naima would have been laid out like Miss Sophia when he knocked
her. Right.
put some water on her face. She'd be all right.
Somebody give me a handkerchief. Something.
You know what I'm saying?
So, oh, my God.
So I want to talk about a couple of things, a couple of Netflix things. One quick thing, I think, bro, you had seen this already, but I finally watched the Stephon Marbury documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw it a couple of days ago. That was very well done.
Yeah, it was actually really great, man. you know, my opinion, you know, Steph is, I think, a year younger than me.
Okay. So you like, that's your era.
Yeah, like Steph was
Did you play against him in high school?
I played against him. Funny story. I actually had the chance to play a little one-on-one with him at Five Star Camp.
Ah, how was that?
Yeah. He's an NBA player. And
he's good.
And I was not, nigga. That's how it went.
I'm about to start hacking this nigga.
we were just working out. It wasn't
I know what you're saying.
I played against him in tournament. I mean, Steph was a prodigy, man. Like
from
way early on, like super early on. And listen, anybody that played basketball and is of that age and you've ever played in any tournaments, you probably have run into, you know, played against a team with Steph on there. You know, I remember, you know, one game, man, like, dude just, he came in and basically played a half. I think we might have been up three. And, you know, he like checks in, dude, hits like five or six threes, next thing I know, we, you know, we like down 12. Or
something. Yeah, damn, like, man, what happened?
You know, I mean, but he's
yeah, but he's an NBA player.
And there are always two things I think we miss is he's sneaky big.
Yes.
And yes. He's sneaky strong.
Yeah.
You don't. He really is like a fucking free safety out there. Like that's
exactly. How he's like Ronnie Lott.
Yeah, like he's a strong, big dude, and you don't really appreciate it again because you know you're watching him against other really big, strong.
Yeah, against like seven footers and 6'11" dudes.
Exactly.
But, yeah, but you realize he's like 6'2".
Yeah.
And, you know, and solid as a rock.
Yeah, like he was special, and what I really thought was dope was that you know obviously he came with a lot of pressure. There was a ton of pressure on him as sort of being that one. And like he says in the movie, you know, he took parts of all of his brother's game. Yeah. I thought that was important. He also, you know, Steph is very when I say he's sharp, I don't mean that in a pejorative way like I thought he was ever stupid. I'm just saying he's a sharp dude in terms of, he knows when people are trying to sort of like talk around him. Trying to be slick, trying to like put him or box mm-hmm. him into a position. And I thought it was refreshing to sort of watch a person really, you know, grow into that. You know what I'm saying? Like grow into it in a way where it didn't, even his interview with like Envy. Ebro.
Yeah.
You know, he's like calling him out on shit, but not really in this aggressive manner, in a very matter-of-fact manner.
Yeah.
And it was just watching his journey, man. We all know he kind of, you know, basically the NBA ran him out of the league, man. Yeah. He still had a lot left in the tank. And he went over to China, man, and basically created another, you know, career.
Yeah. And he's still there now.
Like yeah, and God bless him, man. He's still connected. He's very clear on a lot of things. He speaks with a level of clarity that I think he may not have gotten if he didn't take that journey.
Exactly. I thought. I mean, it was one interesting thing about the doc. Just overall, it's done by Kudi and Chike, who are they come from you know Kanye's camp and at the beginning, and they've done a bunch of videos like
I want to say they used to do J. Cole's early videos.
Yeah,
they were still doing the mixtape stuff.
Probably, yeah, they've worked with several you know artists over the years. They're good dudes too, really nice guys. So I think that the fact that there was also these two guys that are basically like probably the same age as Steph, it gave them access, and I think you could see the when they were interviewing Steph's sisters and brother. And mom, and you felt it was almost like a comfortability because it's like we know them and they know us.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't some white man coming in who's like, I've never been into the project before. Like it's like just, you know what I'm saying. It was just like so the interviews with his family and stuff were really, really insightful and well done, and at times emotional because Steph's father passed. They talked about that and. You know, it was
one of the last things, and I won't touch on this too much, but one of the things that I thought was very, very good and very, very telling was when he talked about his relationship with Larry Brown.
Yeah.
He said, you know, I'm not your kid.
Yeah.
Like, don't talk to me. Like, you might have this father-son relationship with these other folks, but, like, I got a pops. Like,
that's exactly what it is, though. Most of those guys didn't have fathers, but he did. So he's looking at you like, I'm not, dude, I got a dad.
You're not going to talk to me crazy and treat me like I'm a child.
Yeah.
Because, like, this is a professional relationship ultimately. Like exactly. I'm not some wayward 16-year-old kid looking for guidance.
Yeah, looking for a father figure. He's like, well, I got a father figure. And they were like, they were old, you know, super tight. Another quick little interesting thing that I move on up, they did two things. I thought it was interesting how Stephen A. Smith is in the documentary, but then every time they played a Stephen A. Smith clip, he's ripping Steph. It's almost like, dude, you in the documentary, but you constantly just shitted on this kid his whole career, you know. But that, and then also like there was a part that really kind of caught me. It showed me how Steph's emotional, I guess, maturity at the end, because Steph's not really in the doc until the end, like this clip of him. But the interview with him is not to the end, And he's back in Coney Island. He's taking, you know, showing, like, so I played ball, so I went to this. So he goes to the barbershop, which is in the barbershops and throughout the dock anyway, and he meets his kid. And the kid's, you know, getting his hair cut or whatever, and Steph's kind of talking to the kid. And he says to the kid, you know, you could be president of the United States if you wanted to. And the kid has a dumbfounded look on his face like, what the hell are you talking about? And Steph says, nobody ever told you that before? And the kid's like, nah, like, nobody ever said that. And Steph starts kind of crying. Because he's like,
damn, nobody's pouring into these kids.
Nobody's pouring into these kids. Yeah, it was very telling. But anyway, so I highly recommend that. And I also want to talk about The Old Guard, which is on Netflix. Sidebar, and I don't know why they didn't do this as marketing, but, you know, Gina Prince-Glythewood did that movie, who did Love and Basketball, but they're not really publicizing. I think
they are. To black women, yes, they are. Yeah.
Okay.
They,
okay. Maybe I missed. I missed that part.
Yeah. So MDV Inc., which is I think they're friends or associates of all of us, Miata and
they're doing a PR
did the publicity for it.
Oh.
So they sent out kits to, I'm imagining they didn't send out a lot because they were pretty elaborative kits, but they sent out these viewing kits that had like a home projector, like t-shirt, and it looked like a tactical box. And it had like a projector and snacks and a shirt that was like, I come from warriors. And like, so it was, and then there was another campaign on Twitch, a tournament, an all women's tournament, game tournament to play the game.
Okay.
It was mostly marketed to women, and there was the Twitch one was biracial. I saw, I think a white girl actually won the tournament, but what I was seeing on Instagram was black female influencers and were watching the movie. Yeah.
Okay. I missed that. I apologize Charlize
Theron. I don't know how far that reached. I saw it because I know all these half the broads who got the kit. Right. So I don't know how far it reached, but I have seen a lot of word of mouth about it as people were watching it.
Yeah. I mean, Charlize Theron is a huge star. So I understand you got to use her too. I mean, come on. I mean, she's a fucking mega star. But I honestly know Gina directed the movie till it was over and the credits rolled.
Oh, okay.
I really had no idea. I was just like, the movie looked interesting. And at the end, I was like, oh, shit. I had no idea. But anyway, so Gina Prince-Glythewood directed this movie. It's based on a book.
Graphic novel, right? Or is it a comic book?
I think it's a graphic novel.
Right.
And it's
about... Sean, like, what's the fucking difference?
But Sean actually liked it. He watched it. He liked it.
I like the movie.
You don't care, I don't know about all that old background But the movie's about this. It's a group of four or five warriors that are immortal.
Yeah, like mercenaries.
Yeah, mercenaries, and they're immortal. And they the movie starts with
We should have said spoiler alert. Actually,
oh yeah, spoiler alert for anybody that hasn't seen the movie. So we'll try not to do too many spoilers, but the movie starts with the Charlize Theron is the star, and the cat that was in 12 Years a Slave.
Chiwetel
Ejiofor. He's in the movies. He's kind of like a protagonist that changes up a little bit, changes up as the movie goes on. And then the girl that was in the Beale Street.
The black girl. Is that her?
Yeah.
What's that girl's name?
That girl, yeah. But
Like they wanted Janelle. That felt to me like they wanted to cast the Janelle.
She looked like Janelle.
Title.
She looks like Janelle.
She was really giving me Janelle Monáe. Let me look at her name.
Yeah, but it starts off with her. She's in the service and gets her throat slit, and then, you know, kind of like doesn't die. And people are like, what the hell? Like, the movie starts off like that. So it starts off with a bang, and it's action packed all throughout. And I mean, it's just a fun movie. It's just like a fun, a good romp. You know what I'm saying? For 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a good romp, good storyline. So it's like if you combine like a really good action flick with like a good like supernatural
sci-fi
like,
kind of thing.
It's almost I think the combination was really good. I was just kind of mad it was so short. Like, I wanted more, you know? An hour and a half runtime, hour 20 runtime, something like that.
It was almost like 2 hours.
Was it? It felt short.
There's so much action.
I was going to say, I mean, I enjoyed it, and I mostly enjoyed it because it was, first of all, I enjoy action movies. We've always talked about that. But I hate these PG-13 action movies, right, where there's no blood, there's no real sort of death, right?
And so, then we're going to get busy. Let's get busy.
You know, and look, I'm not like a gore fan. Like, I don't need to see people's guts hanging out, right? But I do want to know that when you shoot somebody in the head, that there's some blood splatter. It's not just a bullet, right?
Yeah,
right. That was, the fight scenes were great. It was just enough sci-fi that was palatable for me.
Okay.
Like, it didn't, like, the story isn't centered around it. And let me explain why. I'm not a comic book guy. What I mean by that, I don't enjoy watching someone look invincible.
Okay.
They are not invincible.
But
they hurt is my point.
They were wounded. They were for real wounded.
Yes. Like, so there is a supernatural element, but it is not like this. It's not like, you know, this person jumps off a building, right? And they land on their feet.
Yeah.
Or they just going to be walking in the bullets.
Like, you know, come on. So, yeah, this was like perfect, right up my alley. This is totally something that I would watch, like on a regular basis.
And it's set up for a part two.
Yeah. So now, you know, go get Jason Statham and have him be one of the hunters or something like that.
That's bro, man, right there.
Let's get it popping. Yeah, Jason Statham. Listen, man, 90 minutes of action.
Let's go.
He in and out, easy watch.
Yeah.
You know, silly plot. He wins.
Yo, did you ever see? I never asked you. Did you ever get to see John Wick 3 with Halle Berry?
Of course. Dude, I watched all the John Wicks. I was during quarantine.
Yeah.
I had to rent them. But yeah, I watched all the John Wicks. Oh yeah,
John Wick 3 is hot, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I was hot. All in.
And Halle Berry. Halle Berry getting busy. Halle Berry getting busy in that shit. So I definitely recommend that.
The woman's name, I shouldn't call her a girl. The woman's name is Kiki Layne, the black woman.
Okay, yeah. Inka's obviously not here with us today, so right. I'm going to blast through a couple of TV things real quick while y'all disrespect me and go on online and look at some shit.
I mean,
because it was a couple premieres this week. Love and Marriage Huntsville came back on Saturday.
Let me go on mute.
this nigga, see how they do me? And
Family
or Fiance came back on this Saturday as well. I May Destroy You, which was great last night, but I'm going to leave that, and I'm going to leave Married to Medicine alone until Inka appears back on the show. So I'm going to leave those be. I want to just talk about these two real quick. So, Family Fiancé, this is technically the second week because they did a sneak peek last week. And it's interesting what they're doing is they're doing what that thing that we always talk about where they do, it's really not season two. It's actually the second part of season one because, you know, at the end of Family Fiancé, they kind of give you like an update and the marriages are happening like in 2019, you know, so they had shows that they just held. To put on, and now with the Rona and everything, and you know, production being halted, and them trying to figure out they had enough footage, enough content to start up another season. So, I actually really like this show because I don't think that the cameras have affected the people yet. So Family and Fiancé is a show that was about is like there's a couple who's engaged, who married, but the each family has some reservations about should they get married or not. And so they go to this house in LA, they fly them in, and then they bring in three family members of each from each side, and then they kind of confront the couple about, like, you know, their raggedy shit. You know, sometimes it's just one person, sometimes it's both of them, you know, being raggedy. So, but it gets heated. Like, it gets serious. Like, it gets, and it doesn't feel like they're putting on for the cameras. It feels like the family's all black. So it'd be Aunt Pearl and my cousin Elijah and, you know, my sister, you know, Betty. Like, so it's like real people. Like, you know, ain't no fancy folk up in there. And I really like this show. So I highly recommend this show for like an hour of straight drama. Then the other thing that started up this week was Love and Marriage Huntsville. They started their season. This is their season two. And they just kind of kick in right where it left off with these three couples who live in Huntsville, Alabama. So they're kind of like big fish in this very small pond compared to like, you know, Atlanta, Houston, D.C., New York or whatever. So they do all do kind of real estate and, you know, they have nice houses and they do well. But then what's interesting to me about Love and Marriage Huntsville, besides the drama and the cheating and this and that, is you're actually seeing how somebody's ego can get so big and get so full of themselves because they're doing well or better than the other people in that surrounding city. But it's a small, but their ego is big. It's based on being in a, it's almost like.
It's big, small pond.
Yes, yeah. Yes, exactly. It's like a nice, nigga's nice, but he's playing against like ninth graders. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But he think he Jordan. And that's kind of what this show kind of shows you. It's like, that, cool, God bless y'all doing well, but like, could y'all pop off like this in Chicago? Could y'all pop off like this in, you know, New York or Boston or whatever? I don't know. They're all, you know, most of them are from either from the area or went to school at the Alabama A&M. So they've been there for quite a long time. But it's just very interesting to see that this little city. It's shout out to Huntsville, by the way, because that's where my father's family from, that Huntsville in that area. But it's interesting to see how this little city, southern city, is now kind of like. Everybody in there is trying to get their little piece of the pie and trying to be on the show, and so you know it's just a very kind
of trying to get they're trying to get Huntsville to come up, man.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and there is money in Huntsville because I think NASA.
NASA's
space program's there. Yeah, so you can make a good. Sure,
if you're an engineer, you can do well down there. I watch the show, man.
Here you go.
You know, look, I'm not here to, I don't want to be judgmental about someone's marriage, right? But I do think it's very interesting to watch this man sort of really pretend that what occurred didn't occur.
Martell.
Yes. Yeah. The Martell character, right? Like, the man, not a character, right? But, like, there's, like, this tone and this behavior of, you know, we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to, you know, we're not even going to acknowledge. Like, I mean, I guess, my nigga, like, I guess that doesn't change the fact that you were having, like, a legitimate affair, right? Like, this wasn't.
It was a relationship.
Yeah, nigga, let's not make this out to be, like, you know, you went away and you had a little fun, too much fun in Vegas, or went down to South Beach and it got a little too lit for you.
Yeah.
And you made some bad decisions. Like, my nigga, you was having a full-blown relationship with a chick, and then you get your mans, and like, your mans come on the show. He talking about he didn't know nothing. I knew the girl, but we, you know, she was a waitress at the bar, and I'm like, look, I understand that men will often sort of keep things really close to the vest.
Yeah.
Okay. But when you're in a relationship, like when that's like your main side bitch, nigga, like stop.
Shorty's put pictures out of like Martell, they've been on trips together.
That's what I'm trying to say. Like he's making it one thing. His man's is still trying to co-sign it. And so really what it did to me was that it really sort of fed into He doesn't really want to deal with the why. It's almost like this. He's okay to make the cleanup. Like, he's going to clean the water out of the basement. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to figure out how the water got into
the basement. Exactly.
Right? He's just going to be okay with sweeping that water out.
And then going back to his wife, like, I cleaned out the basement. We good to go.
And so I'm watching this relationship, and it's like, well, we're back together, but she's, you know, we're not going to talk about this. And then she goes into this whole sort of diatribe about how they have each other's passwords now. And
he goes into his phone. Every time he goes out.
He got to FaceTime me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, look, again, I'm who are me? because I'm in no position to judge that their marriage. That's their shit. But like, my nigga, you gotta FaceTime your old lady. Yeah, to show you are
where you said you was.
You down at Mr. Willie's fish and chips, and you got a FaceTime while you at the fish and chips, my nigga.
Yeah,
like what I'm saying is sometimes you have to weigh out if you're going to work toward that, and I think you have to work toward that. And what I also think is, I think that there's some level of production in that, like, particularly the gentleman that he goes to see.
Oh, the therapist.
The older man. He seemed to kind of pull back a little bit from what I remember how he was with him.
Yeah, last season he was going at him crazy.
He was in his ass. He was making him answer questions. And this particular episode, he just seemed a little more reserved or a little more like kind of letting go and not really drilling home.
And you know what? I think a little bit more of what you always say, you know, that I think the therapist is a little more aware of the cameras now.
Yes.
And maybe he heard some plate people be like, you was really hard on him. So he's thinking now, as opposed to just doing, he's thinking, yes, how's this going to look and how's this going to, you know what I'm saying? I think
And another thing too, man, like, I'm going to go, like, look, man, like, we going to stop with this. There was no fathers in the hood shit.
Come on.
Like, I'm sick of that shit, my nigga.
I guess he grew up in the projects in Huntsville. He said there was literally no fathers anywhere.
Men. No men. The guy was like, yo, there were no men? He was like none. And you can tell he's asking him, like, word?
Yeah, nigga, like, nobody?
He's giving him the old black man version of word, my nigga? Like,
yeah,
what? And so I'm like, dude, there is, even if there isn't a large amount of dads, right? Like, you know.
There's always somebody.
There are men around. There are uncles. There are community people, the coaches. Mm-hmm. All of that sort of shit is.
Somebody's grandfather.
Come on, man. Exactly. So to act like that there was no fathers around, or to act like you had no clue that was not norm, like, stop it, dude.
Stop the bullshit.
I mean, that to me is telling of why his hurt from his dad. He's trying to dismiss it.
Nobody else had their father either, so it wasn't that. Interestingly enough, back to the Steph thing real quick. Another thing, to this point, there was a guy in the barbershop because Steph's father passes in the documentary, and the guy says, you know, Mr. Donald wasn't just Steph's father; he was all our father. So there's always that. There's always a few people like that in the neighborhood. Like, yes, there are a lot of single mothers, but there's always that. There's a few men who will be like, you know, y'all boys, Saturday morning, y'all come out here to the playground. We're gonna shoot some ball, or we're gonna organize a cookout, it's the house that everybody goes to you know, whatever.
Even when they're single mothers and they're not fathers living in the home, they're still active around. Like, to simply say, like, you've never seen anyone's dad.
Come on.
Like,
bro.
Ever? Ever. Like, never. Like, I'm not saying that they were, you know, coming to help them with their homework on Wednesday night.
But you ain't even see him come pick them up once.
You ain't see him come pick them up, my nigga? Like, nothing. For the birthday party. You know, you get ice cream. You know, random dads come around for your birthday, take you and two friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Take you down to the Dairy Queen. You ain't see none of that, bro.
Down to the Baskin Robbins.
Yeah, come on, man.
This season, after this first episode, last season, you know, and I'm sure it's going to be a lot more drama this season as well, because that's what drives these shows. But I don't know, for some reason, this first episode made me look at this show. It turned my perspective on the show a little bit, like, oh, this is almost kind of like a social experiment in a way, more than just the drama. There is drama. But it's like, if you really start to peel it apart, it's like, okay,
they got regular drama like everybody else that's on reality, and they just dress it up with some degrees on the wall and nice tailor suits.
Okay? Exactly.
And God bless them. But let me just say, man, like, I'm not having any more children, right? And I don't begrudge people who want to have, you know, these big parties for baby showers and all of that sort of shit, right? But like, just for clarity, my nigga, like, don't invite me to nothing. I'm not going to no baby shower. I gotta wear a suit too.
Word.
I'm like, if ain't no wings, nigga, ain't no Swedish meatballs, ain't no
baked ziti.
Ain't no baked ziti, nigga. Ain't no pineapple upside down cake from somebody's kitchen.
Word.
You know, like, I'm good. I'm so good. Like, I'll send a gift. Yeah. I'll cash app you with all that. But if you asking me to get suited and booted to come out and have fancy ass French toast, my nigga, and stand online to get grits and shit, like, I'm not doing none of that, bro. I'm not fucking with none of that.
Also, I actually want to ask you this.
Yes.
So, and again, I know it's TV, so I get it, but this is their fourth child.
Mm-hmm.
Their children are really young. I think they look like from 10s, 8s. They got little kids. But anyway, it probably had to be 300 people. I'm like, do people still
that doesn't make sense.
For the fourth child?
Not yes. If they're all, the people do, you're not supposed to, you're actually, technically, if we want to be 100, you're not supposed to do a baby shower after your first child, unless your children are far apart. Technically. But obviously none of us subscribe to that. However, when you have children close together, the thought would be that your baby showers, if you choose to have them, are scaled down instead of scaled up. The problem is baby showers, much like prom, baby showers and gender reveals and all that shit have become more about the gram than they've become about the actual occasion.
Absolutely.
And all of that has gone. Like, if you have 3 kids already, let's say, like, under 6, like, nigga, how much more do you want me to buy you? Pass some
first
of
all,
I
nigga,
bought you for them other kids now.
Like, nigga.
You still ain't got that stroller I gave you last 3 years ago?
That shit's still under warranty.
Word.
Yeah.
I know you ain't throw that. Word. I know you ain't throw that baby carriage out. I paid $200 for that shit 2 years
right.
ago.
but even them coming in and like my man is, when I say this dude is suited, he is tailored down. Like, this suit is, the kids are dressed and they've got all of the, they look like the little perm box, the little girl.
Word.
The Easter gear on.
Oh, the little Just For Me boxes.
Just For Me boxes. And I'm like, yo, I've always thought that of baby showers to be a fun and enjoyable time. Exactly. I never thought of them, and maybe this is a generational thing, and I could be completely wrong, but I always thought of them as a sort of fun connection of family.
They're supposed to be. They've become this big-ass production for no fucking reason, because niggas, and I can't even just say it's niggas, white people are doing it too now. They're so extra,
an event planner and all that. So this is the first episode. We're gonna keep watching this. Real quick, just want to mention last TV thing. I watched Sunday Best again. It's really good this season. Just everybody, if you get a chance on Sunday night, you ain't doing nothing. They got some really great talent. They shitted on this girl.
I saw somebody talking about it. It was
She was a lesbian.
Is she
girl.
Queer? She was okay.
Yeah, she was a lesbian girl. She said she was lesbian. It wasn't like she was trying to hide it. She said, she grew up in like Vienna, Georgia, like some deep, like, south. But she said, look, it was tough for me because I'm lesbian growing up in this small black church. And I think her father might have been a pastor or something. Like, but, like, she could sing. Like, she could sing her ass off. So when they didn't pick her, I was like, damn, that's, and then the people online were saying that they thought it was based on her being, being gay. They didn't want to deal being lesbian, and they didn't want to deal with that. I mean, and maybe that's the case, but I'm like, that's messed up because she could really sing. So that's that. I want to give I don't know if it's confirmed yet, but I guess probably an RIP to Naya Rivera.
Yes, confirmed. Yeah, they found her body yesterday.
They found the body, right? Yeah. I saw they said they had found a body, but they hadn't confirmed if it was her, but I guess maybe they have since then. Terrible accident, leaving a young child behind, and just awful. The whole cast, I don't know if you saw, the whole cast from Glee went down to the lake.
For a memorial, I did see that. Or
memorial,
like a vigil or something.
Yeah, like a vigil, so.
I just want to say,
she was only 30 years old, right?
Maybe 30. Early 30s. But I do want to say, I'm sure this was none of our listeners, but the fact that Big Sean was trending the morning she went missing. I saw that. Niggas are annoyed.
Yeah, like he did something. Like he like nigga,
they've been broke up for 7 fucking years. She done had a whole marriage divorce. They were together for like a year. Like I'm trying to imagine if I come up missing, niggas started talking about my ex from 7 years ago. Like, you know what I mean? It's just it's whatever. And we're having conversations already like, oh, Sean's gonna have to take I Don't Fuck With You out of his playlist. I'm like, is that that's what y'all are thinking about right now?
Yeah, that's
like, that's what y'all wanna talk about right now while a woman, a mother is like missing. Yeah. But also that the other thing that has come up out of that is a lot of people once again urging folks. So the lake she was in California is known for dangerous conditions.
There's undercurrents and stuff.
Yeah, it's a windy area. There's strong undercurrents. It's 160 feet deep in some areas. And there are, and there's like a whole forest on the lake floor.
Wow.
And like some of the trees are as high as 15 feet. And so like search and recovery is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And there are areas that are blocked off to swimmers that people like to go in anyway.
Of course.
And, you know, people who swim think that you're going to be all good in the lake or in the ocean. Them open bodies of water will take your ass out. It doesn't matter.
And you'll be gone.
How well you swim.
You'll be gone.
So just, and I say this as a swimmer who had to go pull somebody else out of the water in Jamaica because, and almost, we both almost went under because that, those waves were so choppy. But, yeah, open water is not a joke.
No.
And apparently there are signs that insist that you wear a life vest, even if you're swimming. But, you know, some people be like, I got it. I'm good.
Yeah, because her son had his life vest on.
Yeah, thank God. I mean, probably because he's 4. But, yeah, like, not only that, but, like, open water can really make you tired. And there's no edge to hang
absolutely.
On to.
Yeah.
You can't touch
the bottom. Your feet down. Exactly.
Yeah, you can't just put your feet down. You can't just coast over to the edge real quick or nothing like that. Like, yeah, don't sleep on open water at all.
Yeah.
That shit is not a game. Yeah, it's not a game.
Peace to her and her family. It's terrible, man. Quick shout out to Joy Reid, who got a promotion and is taking over the Chris Matthews slot on MSNBC.
I've been waiting for that announcement since Chris Matthews left. It's about time.
They said the name of her show. I'm totally blanking on it.
I don't remember.
It's something to read something, but whatever. But so that's amazing. I wonder who they're gonna pick to replace Joy now on for AM Joy.
Right.
They've been kind of wrote that the woman Tiffany Cross did it last 2 weekends ago. I don't know if she did it last weekend. I think she might have. I know Jonathan Capehart has done it. There's been a few people. There's a Latin cat. I can't remember his name. He's done it. Like there's been a few people who have done it. The spot. So we'll see. I guess who they'll pick because I don't know when Joy. When does she start? Do you know, Nye?
I'm not sure when the show starts.
Yeah, but just one piece to her.
I'm happy for her.
It's great to have a black face in such a primetime slot. There have been a couple of Black Lives Matter murals in New York. There's one in Harlem on 7th Avenue between 125th and 127th. And then there's one in front of Trump Tower.
Which de Blasio led the charge for as kind of a fuck you of sorts to Trump.
Exactly. I actually rode down there 2 days ago.
Stupidest place to put a Black Lives Matter mural. Like, for those who don't know the area, who aren't familiar, Trump Tower isn't just in Midtown Manhattan. It's in the middle of, like, luxury row on Fifth Avenue, right?
Yeah.
So, like, the Trump Tower building houses Gucci, it houses Tiffany.
Mm-hmm.
Across the street is like Bulgari.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be Prada. I think Prada moved around the corner.
Yeah.
Like the Abercrombie and Finch store.
Yeah, Harry Winston.
Harry Winston. On the other way is Bergdorf on one side and like the Louis Vuitton store on the other side.
And,
like
the Apple store.
Oh, yeah, and the Apple store is down the block and like Chanel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's, and like the Polo store is on the other. So it's like, you're in the middle of white luxury commercialism.
It's like putting Black Lives Matter on Rodeo Drive.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Exactly that. In the middle of Beverly Hills. And it's like, why? You know what I'm saying? Like, I get it. And I know that a lot of people have been, you know, kind of annoyed at the prevalence of Black Lives Matter in the street overall. I don't mind it because for the most part, it's the community doing it.
Yeah.
And it gives some people like some hope. And I mean, it needs to be done in conjunction with, not in place of.
Mm-hmm. But
this one, I think because it was led by the city, already put a bad taste in my mouth. Because and Blasio then, and Trump have their own fucking bullshit.
They got their own separate beef.
And they're dealing with.
And like I said, I was down there. I guess what's today? Today's Tuesday. So it was Sunday I was down there. I rode my bike down there. And last night, or it was a Sunday night, somebody threw red paint on it already.
Of course they did.
So it's already like becoming a
thing. Well, I think what's interesting is that is by far, probably outside of the UN,
the hardest place to get to?
That has got to be the most secured area.
Oh, yeah.
It was probably sanctioned. That vandalism was probably sanctioned.
There was what's called the metal
barricades around it.
All around it. And it was went on a Sunday, and it was mad cops around
that area. That is regularly. So, to give some perspective, you cannot drive down, I believe that might be
57.
Between 57th and 56th.
Okay, so 56th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that 56 is, mm-hmm. you can't even drive down that street.
Right. Like,
it's literally barricaded. There's a metal pole that literally shoots out of the fucking ground over there.
Yeah.
I've gone by it. That, like, when I tell you there is no way, even if the cops weren't paying attention, let's just say for the sake of arguments that there were no cops in that particular area.
Yeah. You can't even get there.
There are thousands of cameras.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I, thousands may be a lot.
I don't know if thousands is a lot.
I'm just saying in that corridor specifically.
You can't be on the low.
Angle.
Ain't on the low.
There's no low.
Yeah. You're
walking around there like just wandering aimlessly, bro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So either, I mean, you know, of course it's conspiracy theory me, but either was an inside job or something. But like you said, there's no, like I said, you'd have to climb over the barricade. I saw the picture of the paint. You'd have to climb over the barricades, which right away you're going to get, you know, or tackled or whatever.
Right.
And then throw paint on it. And it's not spray paint. It's paint, like from a paint can.
Right.
Like splash the paint and then jump back over the barricades. And then run away. There's no way that could happen. And if it did happen, there's no way there's not video of the people doing it.
It was definitely sanctioned because Trump is still mad about it. Because Trump was talking yesterday, he had a press conference, and he was like, you know, shooting deaths are up, but y'all want to put the Black Lives Matter mural in front of Trump Tower. Y'all need to be worried about these shootings. So he's there. I'm like, imagine openly admitting as the fucking president of the entire goddamn United States that you think that Black Lives Matter is an attack on you. Like saying the quiet part out loud, we're so past that, but it still shocks me.
It's still amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the one up in Harlem, I spoke to one of the artists when they were doing it. I was riding by there one day. He told me what they did was they sanctioned 2 letters per artist to kind of, you know, do their, like you said, nah, it's more of a community thing. It's like a lot of, you know, Black artists and stuff. So they kind of got two letters. I got like the L and the C or something, you know, and you kind of do it however you want to do it. So the one in Harlem is actually really nice because it's more colorful and more, the one in front of Trump is all yellow.
Right.
But the one uptown is like more colorful and more kind of vibrant. So if you're around, you should go check out the one, at least check out the one uptown, because the community's watching that one. Ain't nobody gonna mess that one up. Wanted to mention,
they got the, actually, I'm just looking at the Daily News. They literally just posted that they got the guy on video.
Oh, okay.
Of course they do.
You said there's no way they couldn't.
Yeah.
No way they couldn't. I wanted to mention Chance the Rapper. Bro, you want to take this one?
I mean, I can. So Chance the Rapper, who's from Chicago, woke up and decided that he was going to be a Kanye West for president surrogate. And he, you know, started to ask, you know, basically he's posing the question to his 8.3 million followers, basically saying, how is Biden better? Change my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, like change my mind.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the meme, like,
yeah, like, which is disingenuous as shit. Yeah.
Like, why would we not trust Kanye?
Right.
Here? And, you know, I said it to you guys via text message, and I really blame this on us.
Yeah.
This is what happens when we allow people who talk with a certain tone, who use specific language, you know, they don't curse.
Yeah.
They come from a you know, he's a high society kid, let's be mm-hmm. frank.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He comes from a certain pedigree. Okay. He has been allowed access, and there's a level of expectation that these are smart people because they speak so well. And I'm using yeah. air quotes mm-hmm. with that, right? Like, but nigga, that's dumb. Like, that was right. dumb before you said it. And it is, and if this is the level of discourse that has taken place, then no wonder Kanye feels the way yeah. I feel.
Right.
Like,
right.
no yeah. wonder. Like, this is totally on brand. Right? This is totally on brand. And guess what, nigga? If you trust him so much, then let him manage your career. How about we right. do that? Since you, exactly. you got so much faith in Kanye and his ability to run shit, hand over the reins, let him run your career, and let's see how that works out.
Somebody said that in a tweet, that just to reiterate what you said, it was like the fact that, I'm paraphrasing, basically like the fact that Kanye has friends like this around him shows that he doesn't have no real friends.
Right.
Because they're just co-signing right. any fucking bonkers idea that he says.
You know what? I don't think here's my thing about that. I don't think he's co-signing it because it's my friend necessarily, right? Like, I'm trying to just support my man. The scarier part is I think he believes it. Like,
I think he believed it
because, dude, nobody gets up and decides right. that's the avenue yeah. they're going down.
I yeah. think he believes it, and I think, so there's a couple things. Like Sean said, this is the problem with us giving niggas who know how to string some words together too much country. And we also need to understand that you can have brilliance in certain areas. You can be a creative genius. You can have a way with words. You can really be able to talk very eloquently about certain areas, and it doesn't mean that you're smart
no
in every area, right? Like no. like politics and civics is still something that a lot of people think they know more than they understand.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, the thing about Chance's conversation about Kanye, it's irresponsible because we know Kanye doesn't even have potential to be a candidate.
Well, he didn't even sign up for the paperwork. Right.
So he can't, we know he can't be a real candidate, which with a certain, I hate using the word low information voter because I think it's a dog whistle and a misdirect, but with an actual low information voter, which a lot of Kanye's fans are low information everything, they're just going to mm-hmm. get what they get from selected sources and not actually venture on their own to do any independent verification. What stuff like Chance's conversation is setting up is an opportunity for when Kanye doesn't end up on the ticket, for people to be like, oh, it's a conspiracy, it's the Democrats.
God, they didn't want Kanye on the ticket.
They couldn't do
it. They were scared he was going right. to take votes.
And they're not going to be swayed any differently. But yeah. I think what was interesting is that Chance was doubling, tripling, quadrupling down mm-hmm. on real arguments for a while, but as mm-hmm. soon as motherfucking Terry Crews
co-signed,
was like, I totally understand, this is what happens when you're an independent thinker, Chance was like, let me back it up. And like literally said he was running down the hill he chose to die on, showed a meme of him running down the escalator. But my thing is, Chancellor, this is like the third time you've done exactly this. The last time it was Donald Jr. who retweeted him and was like, yes, an independent thinker. And Chance was like, oh shit, let me back it up. So it's like, and that was about Kanye too. So it's like, my nigga, stop. First of all, you have people very close to you who you could call and socialize yeah. these ideas with. Like, you can exactly. have a conversation with real motherfuckers who can actually have this talk, right?
Yeah.
And ask questions and have the debate and do all this other shit. Like, I really need people with these platforms to stop forming your ideas in real time for like the sake of devil's advocacy or just for the sake of conversation or just for whatever, because the shit is irresponsible. It's irresponsible as fuck.
Yeah, I think we also have a responsibility to stop giving these particular people
attention.
Not burst. Yes. Yeah. We give people, and again, I sort of go back to Don Lemon, because I was just astounded by the people he was naming to come to talk on his show. And again, I had been watching a ton of these documentaries, and I'm like, these are other people who are far more versed in this space, far more, you know, articulate and can be able to sort of talk about this stuff. And like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, because you are, again, we do this because you're a rapper, and there's this sort of, like, we idolize people in a way, like the cult of personality, the celebrity, the just everybody is just so, oh, they do this and they do that. Like, I don't fucking care. Like, Chance
yeah.
sounds crazy. He sounds crazy.
Yeah, he sounds
crazy. And it is a stance that you can take. And we can be frank about this. It is a stance that you can take when you have the financial ability to do so. When
yeah.
when the things that are going to come down the pipe, right, aren't going to impact you in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You can have these sort of ridiculous ass stances.
Yeah.
And this yep. is about this
there's
is about
be food on your table regardless.
Not everything, yes, yeah. because not and this is what we talked about before, about people just don't have the sense of being in communal, living in a communal way and understanding right. that what may be good for the whole may not necessarily be in my
what's good for them individually.
Yes,
yeah.
yes, but it's only what is good for me. It's only what is good
yeah.
for me.
Right.
Is that like that shit is that's first of all, that shit is whack. That yeah. shit is lame. And like my nigga, like you sound like it was the dumbest shit I'd ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Right.
Like it's the dumbest thing I've ever
dumb.
Heard.
Yeah, yeah. It was shockingly stupid. Like again, and not even about idolizing Chance, but it's just like I know you went to decent schools. Like this
right.
this that like you have no type of cognitive thinking like at all. Just this
but I think stupid. but that's the thing. I think that we like
Nas
said,
right?
yeah, like Nas said, like there's a level of contrarianism being sort of thrusted, and you know what Bomani said, some man that was really interesting. It's like, yo, just because you fucking loud don't mean I gotta respect your opinion.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. like, and that's what it is, man. You got this platform and you're loud, okay? And I'm not saying, you know, well, we gotta throw you away or you can't. I'm not saying yeah. none of that shit. I'm saying what you said was dumb
right.
as fuck.
Right.
It's dumb. Oh, okay, and if you was around a bunch of real niggas,
they would have told you it was dumb. Yeah. And also, to your point about being canceled, I can also disagree with your opinion and tell you it's stupid. That does not mean I'm canceling you.
Yeah,
and this is, and I blame all of this shit. I'm gonna sound so old and crotchety saying this. I blame all of this shit on fucking zero tolerance policies, participation trophies, and this fucking everybody's opinion is valid and every picture goes in the refrigerator ass shit that's been manifesting over the past 20 years. Because now you got a whole generation of people who do not, who feel like they have a, that everything they say should be given equal, like everything everybody says should be given equal weight, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't weigh their shit, then there's something wrong with you instead of just them being wrong. Like, no, yeah. what you're saying is stupid. Like there's difference of opinion. And then there's actually like what you're saying is stupid and wrong. Like,
yeah.
and it sometimes your opinion is just fucking wrong. Like you're wrong, entitled man. To it. And I'm entitled to tell you that you sound stupid.
Yeah.
Like period. And the internet has created this place where people think it's autonomous and everybody's shit gets weighed the same. And no motherfucker, you're wrong. Like, you're actually wrong. Right.
I want to mention a couple more things. The NBA bubble. They're supposed to be starting to send people down there now, and they're already. So one rookie dude left the bubble yesterday, the day before yesterday, to go across the campus and get some food. So he
pick up from his delivery.
Pick up
driver,
from his
yeah.
delivery. Yeah, from his delivery. So he's fucking got to be quarantined now. His mom, who's a doctor, actually got on. I think she's a PhD. Got on Twitter and basically was like, you dumbass nigga, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
I saw a girl post, I mean, she could be lying, but I saw a girl post, a little cute girl saying that she's already been invited, her and her girls, to come to the bubble. So anybody thinking that NBA players, you know, young guys, you know, a lot of wealthy guys are going to just sit in this bubble for 10 weeks and have no interaction with any of the outside world, it's just not realistic.
It's not realistic. Already, like, you know, there's an NBA bubble Twitter account. But the whole shit.
Oh,
is
I
like
didn't know that. Oh,
yeah, okay. There's an NBA bubble Twitter account that like keeps track of everything. Where it's like in life inside the bubble or life in the NBA bubble. So it's like a it's half satire, but it basically tracks tweets about what's going on inside the bubble. But this shit is like a bad reality show.
Yeah.
But also, I'm just also like, how are we we had this conversation already? I know, but like, how are we bringing contact sport back? I still don't understand. Yeah. I still don't understand. This is all bad.
It came out yesterday that two. Big, they're not at the bubble yet, but two big NBA stars, Russell Westbrook and James Harden, both tested positive for Corona. They're asymptomatic and, you know, they're quarantined and they'll be okay. But there's going to be so much more of that. Like, just because a guy is not on a ventilator, like on his deathbed, doesn't mean that he might not have the virus. And the virus, from what I know about it, you know, not much. I'm not no Dr. Fauci, but I know the virus also. It doesn't manifest right away. So you might have
it. And it also presents.
It presents different in everybody.
In different body, yeah.
It might not present. I could have it now and not and test now and test negative, and then in 2 weeks test positive because it something happened that triggered it.
Right.
So there's all these like factors that are going into this thing. So I'm praying I'm wrong, but I feel like this bubble is going to be a fucking disaster.
It's
going to be a goddamn disaster. Real quick, do you want to talk a little bit about, well, both of y'all want to talk a little about your man, Taleb?
I mean,
this nigga here, like, he's a fucking weirdo, though, because
he's such a weirdo, like, and I have to believe it's drugs. I have to believe it's either drugs or some kind of psychosis, and I'm not, again, like I said about Kanye last week, I'm not trying to make light of mania, but nobody thrives off attacks. Which
for
he
hours,
was framing
hours of the time, though.
At the way. I actually stopped following Taleb about 4 years ago because of this shit. Because I just couldn't take it. Because his account is basically just an argument account. But what has happened is that since Trump took office, who he's usually arguing with are white racists. Okay. So people kind of, I guess, enjoy it or enjoy seeing the takedown. And that's a whole nother conversation. Like, we got to stop glamorizing, like, the clap back. You know, take down.
They had time.
We have to stop. Yeah, we gotta stop glamorizing that energy. Like, it's not. I get caught up in it. My damn self. It's not something that we should encourage. It's not healthy for any of us to foster. But that being said, so a woman was having a conversation about colorism, and it was a combination. I found the tweet that said Taleb off. I haven't followed the whole conversation back, but I know it was about colorism and about, I guess the conscious rappers, the woke rappers, whatever. Mm-hmm. So this person tweeted something about Jay, Kendrick, Cole.
Let me jump in a little bit because what I saw the original was saying was name a rapper that is married to a black woman.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So,
and then the person named all of those.
All of these rappers, Jay, Cole, included Taleb in a list of like 10 names.
Yeah.
And this girl quote retweeted and said, and almost all of them are married to light-skinned women, but that's a conversation for another day. Literally, that's what she said. And almost all of them are married to light-skinned women, but that's a conversation for another day. So Taleb jumps on that and says, no, let's have that conversation today. Basically, what you trying to say about my wife? You have questions about my wife. Now, mind you, she ain't called nobody out by name. She ain't saying that she, and she didn't even say all of them. She said almost all of them. Taleb's wife, depending on what picture you look at, sometimes she look like she my complexion. Sometimes she look like she my mama's complexion. Maybe sometimes she got a tan, sometimes she don't.
Depending on the lighting.
Yeah, the pictures I originally saw her, I was like, she ain't even light skinned. She fucking brown. Mm-hmm. But then I saw some pictures where she looks a little yellow. I don't know. But it felt very hit dog hollering, right? And he just started going in, going in. And she came back like, basically, nigga, your problematic ass, and like threw up some screen caps of previous instances where Talib has been, you know, accused of sexual harassment by a former artist, you know, reports to him and his wife got into a fight, like these type of things. She didn't say anything herself, but she was like throwing this shit up. Like, really, this is what you want to do right now?
The this you joint. This you?
Yeah, this you. So he keeps going. So now, all of a sudden, so she, but after a while, she blocked him. His wife gets on and is basically like, I'm sorry if anybody feels harassed, but this is what he likes to do, and better it be y'all than me. That's like literally what she said. And then said it twice. Like, she was like,
I deal with this shit all day, every day.
Yeah, basically, she was like, listen, I just, and like, two, she's deleted both of them now and locked her account, but she was basically like, yeah, I mean, he enjoys engaging like this. I'm sorry, but it's better y'all than me. I don't want to deal with it. Like, literally, this is what she said. And so she's co-signing the shit, basically. And she, the homegirl blocked him. Like, at some point after a couple of hours, this was Friday, he was still tweeting and adding her in almost every tweet yesterday, which was
it's still going. Monday. It was yesterday. He was still doing it. Wow.
He was still going yesterday. But
I thought
like,
he stopped over the weekend.
But like Friday to Sunday, I don't think this nigga went to sleep. Like, it literally was like just tweet after tweet after tweet after tweet. And it when you scan back over it, even though, and he has, I don't know if they're fans. Some people have suggested that they work for him, but I know how quickly Twitter likes to twist stuff and say, you know, you're an operative of somebody such and such. So I'm not going to automatically assume that. It could just be a diehard fan, but he has fans that were doxing her and her family on Sunday. Like she's really scared now, right? And her whole thing is like, nigga, I didn't even say shit to you, you know? And he's like, that's a lie, like underlining his name in a tweet. It's like, she didn't actually say your name though, motherfucker. Like, it's like I said, it's very hit dog hollering, but just that fact that you have that energy, like that's what you want to spend your time on.
Yeah.
Right now. And anybody who came to defend her, like he went after them too. Like he was in it with Drew Dixon and then he was in it with some other people. And just like, so I had tweeted on my timeline, like, y'all stop tweeting at this nigga because it's not going to help. Like, nothing's going to help. Yeah. You know what will help? A man that he respects standing up to him will help. But none of them are going to do that. So it's like, he's that dude. And he keeps talking about how he wrote a song called Black Girl Pain and he wrote a song called Brown Skin, blah, blah, blah. He loves black women. Like, but I've seen him act like this with black women on Twitter. And maybe he just acts like that with everybody. I don't know. But I know that what made me unfollow him was the fact that he does it with black women specifically. So, fuck Talib,
basically. I'm like with Nile about, like, I unfollowed that nigga quick. I think I might have followed him for about 2 months. I was like, oh, this nigga's annoying. So I unfollowed him quick. But I agree. What I saw was a level of, you know, he reminds me of, remember the kid you grew up with and he would be like, I'm not touching you, kid.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, put your hand like right there. Yeah.
But I'm not touching you. That's who he is.
Definitely.
That's the adult version of that kid, right? He is, when he locks into something and he feels like there is no, and he does this to people in which they are, I would probably, you know, for lack of a better term, they're powerless, right? Like they don't, they can't really access him and they can't really harm him in a grand way. Right. So he's able to sort of latch on to that. And he's able to sort of go at that person. And like many people with fan bases, particularly rabid fan bases, they know what they're doing. Yeah. When they're acting people and sort of sicking those fans on them. And he was wrong. And he's, you know, he's an asshole, right? Like he's an asshole. I do want to say this, though. There was a level of trolling that people do with people like that. Quite often, and like you said, it is
that people do with people like Talib.
Yeah. There is a level of trolling, and when that troll begins to engage,
it's
almost like, well, why are you still going on about this? Like, ignore that nigga. Like, I don't get the fun in any of that sort of shit. All of that. you know, I'm going to, like, I saw one post where somebody was like, well, can you ask Dave Chappelle? Because I guess he said, I'm living my best life chilling with Dave Chappelle. And they were like, you know, can you ask Dave Chappelle why he only talked about black men and not black women? And I'm just like, I'm like, guys, what are we really doing here?
Yeah,
like,
what you trying to get out of this shit?
That's not a fruitful conversation. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I mean by
right.
Like, so then when he locks into you, right? Like when he you know gets on you, then it turns mm-hmm. into you're harassing and you're doing. It's like, come on, guys, what are we? You know, I just. If that's your bag, man, I guess I get it. I guess I just don't like the idea of people trying to sort of actively be. I remember following one person, I won't say their name, and they would, you know, they would constantly like engage people like this, like in a bit of an aggressive tone. And then one day it was like, nobody, you know, said something to that man that was talking crazy to me online. It's like,
Which one?
Right. You be out here all the time. Like, yeah. Right. What is going on here? So,
Now you want to be damsel in distress.
So, yeah, right. So and I don't enjoy it. And listen, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't even think that's what this woman was going for because, again, she ain't at Talib. She did not tag Talib. She ain't tagged none of them. She was retweeting.
That's an indication of someone who is an unhinged person.
Right.
You have an tweet and you're searching your name.
Yeah.
Right. He was eager. It was whether it was going to be her. He wanted some smoke.
He's always looking for smoke.
Yeah.
Niggas who search their names are the worst, or they have fans. And I've had to tell people about this before. Like, if here's the rule of thumb. If you see somebody tweeting about anybody, right, and that they're tweeting about somebody who has a large following and they don't tag them, that shit is on purpose. Don't be the motherfucker to tag them.
And it's not even about,
well, some people be like, well, you should be bold enough to say it to them, but it's not even about drawing the ire of that person. Sometimes it's about the chain reaction. Like, Talib has not just retweeted her, but tagged her in hundreds of tweets. So which also drove his followers after her, right? And that's the thing is, like, you can report tweets, and Talib is very careful. I went through his tweets. He's very careful. Like, he doesn't actually break any Twitter guidelines. His followers do.
Mm.
He doesn't. But you can report individual tweets, but you can't report somebody basically throwing up the bat signal for niggas to come at you, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing that's tricky. So, like, for example, when I talk about people who I know has those rabid kind of followers, like a Sean King or whatever, I rarely will tag them. And I tell people, like, if I ain't tag them and you tag them, I'm blocking you. Because you're drawing unwanted attention. Because it's not just about them, it's about their followers.
Yeah.
Because sometimes even the followers, the bots especially, will search those people's names as well. Just to jump in. People do it with Terry Crews now. You know, like, just to jump in and have your fucking say, or Kanye, whatever. So, I mean, but my thing is just, like, you are, at this point in the game, you're an elder statesman, right? You consider yourself to be an activist and a spokesperson of the people. What kind of way is this to behave?
Yeah.
Period. Like, he's like, she was attacking my family. No, the fuck she wasn't. Shut up. You know what I mean? It's like, you.
And then it came out that he got a side chick pregnant or something.
Yeah. And also was like, well, what business is that of yours? So you tweeting from the side chick's baby shower while your wife is like, leave me out this shit.
Exactly.
It's all messy.
Yeah.
It's all messy.
Last thing I want to discuss, we have to discuss, is Will and Jada's Red Table Talk.
Mm.
So Jada Pinkett Smith did a Red Table Talk. Initially, kind of presented it like she was going to do it herself. Didn't mention that Will was going
to
be on.
Well, she said she was going to bring herself to the table.
Yeah, but she didn't mention Will. But, you know, Will was there, and they discussed everything that about her affair with August Alsina, and how it happened and how it made them feel. One of the first things that I thought about this was. And I mean, I guess I don't know if it even really matters, but it was kind of interesting. Like, nobody, I didn't see people really kind of get on Jada, chastise her, because she's been lying for like 4 years. She's constantly said that it didn't happen, and made August look like he was a fucking nutcase because he was basically making up shit. And I'm like,
She said it, has she actually herself gone on record and said it didn't happen? She, because they both started by saying that recently a spokesperson of theirs had made a comment that they themselves did not make. That was the very first thing they said. So has Jada herself actually at any point said it didn't happen, or has she just not said anything?
I'd have to research that, but I feel like I remember thinking with him, like when he did his video when they was it was like the kind of video where they were texting back and forth and all stuff. I remember her kind of insinuating that like that that it didn't happen. But regardless, so she admitted that she had an affair with August Alsina. The time he was about 23 years old, she was about 44 years old. He was friends with Jaden, their son. And he came, Jaden asked if he could come stay with them because he was dealing with some physical issues too, like some type of stomach thing. I remember he was like, something really bad, like physical issues and mental issues. He's had a pretty kind of tough upbringing. He lost his sister. He kind of grew up in, kind of wild way in New Orleans. So he was going through a lot of stuff. So he came over to stay and at the Smith compound, and that turned into an affair. Now, she says, they said on the table talk that they were split up at the time, looking like they were going to be split forever.
Which they have said before. And for the record, they have said before that they, a few years ago, split up. They were both still on the property, but for all intents and purposes, they were living separately.
Yeah. So, I was watching that. Van Lathan has a podcast with... I think it's the woman's name, Rachel something. Sorry, Rachel. But they were talking about this today, and she made a very interesting point. Because a lot of people have focused in on, and I've seen this argument several times, if that was who was the first, and that was Will, and Willow had brought home a young friend, and y'all wouldn't be here having all these jokes. Y'all be wanting to crucify Will for dating this girl this much younger. So I don't understand why y'all making jokes and kind of letting Jada get away with the fact that she dated this younger guy. But Rachel made a very interesting point. She was like, forget the age thing. They brought the boy in to their home to help him.
Yeah.
And, physically and mentally.
Right.
And she took it. It's Rachel. She's like, Rachel's like, she took advantage of this dude because he obviously was going through a lot of shit.
And when he was in a vulnerable state.
And she needed to feel whole again. So she was like, oh, he's going to come in for this, but I'm going to give him some pussy. And it turned it into a relationship because it wasn't just she fucked him a couple times. Like, they were, like, going out to functions and black red carpet events and this and that. And so basically, like, she kind of abused him emotionally more so than physically. I don't think Jada really addressed much. I don't think Jada really addressed much at all, like on the red table talk. She kind of danced a lot to me.
I will say that Will kind of helped her. She was definitely like being very vague.
Yeah, Will was like, what the fuck are we doing here?
Will was like, what'd you do, Jada? Okay, I think you need to be very clear, Jada. So he was kind of like an accountability partner for her. And, I mean, it probably was embarrassing for her to talk about. And I'll say this. So, I really have not been super interested in any of this because I feel like the Smiths have told us in their own way several times that they don't have a conventional marriage.
Yes.
Rumors about them have swirled for however long. And, like I said, at the beginning of Red Table Talk last year, whenever, I have no concept of time right now. I think it was last year when the Red Table Talk debuted. One of the first like big episodes was them talking about this period where their marriage had broken apart, and they were basically like, they basically said like, we split all the way up, we had to tear up, and they insinuated that it was on Jada because Jada was unhappy and she was searching for something and she didn't know what she was looking for. So she's mentioned a couple of times over the course of the Red Table Talk that she had gone through this period where she was really unhappy and She didn't know who she was, and she didn't know what she wanted, and she didn't know what was going to fulfill her. So all of this stuff has already been addressed in some way without specification. So, like, I kind of wasn't really paying attention because, A, I thought, one, even take the age apart, yes, it's irresponsible to bring a person into a relationship that way if they're not ready for it. And when I say bring them into a relationship that way, I mean we're like you and your still current, even if a strange husband, are on the same property. And this is removing the age and friendship with Jaden aside. Yeah, like, not everybody can handle that shit, right? And who knows what the conversation was when she decided she was going to get back with Will, but also, I'm pretty sure she knew she was never going to be with that nigga for long term. So, like, August, did you not communicate that? Like, did y'all have that conversation? He's younger.
I'm talking shit because I don't know, but I would assume, I'm thinking about it, when I was 23 or 24, if I was dating this, you know, older woman who's, you know, famous and attractive and all that, and then we start to go public. See, it's one thing if you're just doing it on the low, yo, we met over here. But then if you start going to public events, and
they were like covertly public, though. It was undercover. You know what I mean? Like, well, it was under.
Saying they were a couple, but they're at an event without Will. You know what I'm saying? So I could have seen how you could be like, oh, it's lit. Like, you know, she's showing me off to the public. What you feel? You got something to say, bro?
I said to you guys, because I hadn't said anything on Twitter when all of this stuff sort of broke, and I think I said in the group chat, I was like, yo, I don't know that I believe him.
And I said
I'm not suggesting in any way that he was warped, but I was kind of listening to language, and I'm like, okay, he hasn't really explicitly said that they had a physical relationship. He was like, relationship, you know, there was a lot of dancing around words.
Yeah, it was a lot of gray area.
A lot of gray areas, right? So my assumption was that, listen, this young man, he was sort of brought into this home. I think that there was a level of intimacy that may have been misconstrued. That can happen, right? And that maybe he's just taking some things that might have occurred out of context. Let me kind of just, you know, hear the rest of it. So I was a little taken aback when she was just like, yeah, you know, this is what happened. We had an entanglement, which entanglement. The word of the month now. But I don't think when we say the fact that when we say take away the age thing is inconsequential to me, right?
Right.
But
the nature of the relationship is
Nature of the relationship, how they met through through a kid. And they were operating under the guise of helping this person get better. And yes, the taking advantage of and the sort of, you know, listen, I think it's very easy for us to forget that, you know, someone is 23. Yes, they're an adult. Okay. But they're not always equipped. And when I listen to him talk now, I immediately think of, oh, he's like a kid. He was a kid at 23. This was not, you know, this wasn't some world traveled, you know, 23 year old, as you know, it wasn't like a Usher 23. He was an old nigga at 23. You know what I'm saying? So I'm watching, and that was a part of why I didn't believe it. I was like, nah, I can't wrap my head around that. And listen, If Jada wants to, you know, whatever their marriage situation is, their marital situation is, I think that they probably had rules and laid some groundwork down. And I would like to think that one of the rules would be, don't be fucking a nigga that's living in the house. Like,
don't fuck none of Jaden's friends.
and I think that there is a double standard. And I think that we are ignoring the fact because, yes, if Will was fucking some 21-year-old, 22-year-old young girl that Willow was a friend with and he was mentoring or helping through a period, like, nigga, that would be crazy. That would be crazy. And for this to be presented as some sort of even playing field relationship, I think is disingenuous. The kid was reeling through trauma. He was dealing with some addictions. He had a ton of things that were going on at the time, because I believe he was fucking with the lean or the coke or the heroin.
He'd actually gone into a coma at one point.
So it was like, oh, this is really nice. You know, they're looking out for this kid, and they're gonna, you know, sort of help him and groom him and basically get him ready to go back into the world. Yeah. And I think that it's just kind of wild for me to think that kind of a relationship turned into
I'm banging the shit out of this kid on a regular basis.
And I'm not saying that she may not have looked at him and thought, oh, you know, he's an attractive young man and da 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 da. There was some level of attraction to some of the vulnerability that could have been there. But I just think that, you know, in the grand scheme, you're the adult here, right?
Like, you know what it is? Her name is Rachel Lindsay, by the way, Van's partner on the podcast. She was a bachelor. She was on one of the Bachelor shows. But anyway, the bottom line is, it's predatory.
Yeah.
It's predatory. Like, she was a predator to this, predatory to this kid. And because it's a double standard. So because it's a woman, it's like, oh, yo, he's fucking this young, this older woman. And in the other way, Will would have been crucified. It's very predatory. And I think that kind of is getting swept up.
Some people are addressing it. I've seen three schools of thought, and I've been up the first, which is like, I'm not even getting engaged. Like, when I saw August do the song, I guess the beginning of last year when this first came up, then I was like, this is fucking tacky, right? And so to me, for him to bring it up again a year later is still tacky. But that aside, there's like a couple different issues that for me, that's tacky. What the Will's doing their business is whatever. They've managed to keep their shit mostly quiet for however long. But I do agree that, like, the nature of their relationship was inappropriate as fuck, and that it really was on Jada to know this kid couldn't handle it. Even if you needed some dick, like, you needed to know this was not the dick. It might have been convenient. And that's really what I think this probably was. It was convenient dick. He was around. He was already acclimated to the family rather than her going out and picking up some strange and whatever. Still, that's not okay. That said, I do see people talking about that aspect of it. But you know what? I felt the same way when Chili started dating Usher. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't the first time I felt that way. And even when Chili was dating Usher, I mean, granted, it was a different time socially, but I was shocked then at how few people had a problem with it. I was like, she's known him since he was like fucking 11. You know what I mean? It's just that was very weird to me. When you've known somebody since childhood, you literally watch them grow up in real time and then you get with them. This is different, but it's still the same kind of thing. Like, he's introduced to you on a level of a child, for lack of a better word.
A child. Appear to your child.
Yes.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's crazy, yo.
I do see some people holding her accountable, but not as many. But I will say this. I said the same shit when the rumors went about that Puff was dating Lori Harvey. And I didn't see as much reaction about that either. You know what I mean? Because it's like, well, she's grown. She's 27. I was like, it's fucking disgusting. She's supposed to be just as
Like the same. She's like 23 or something.
I'm like, she's like Christian's age. I don't think she's Justin's age. So even then I was like, how is this okay? So I don't even know if it would have been a turnabout, motherfuckers would have been flipping out type thing, because I was surprised at how little people were really reacting to the Puff. Lori Hart, even though it kind of blew over, but it was like, I don't know. Niggas have weird standards about age of consent and adulthood and all that other stuff. And had August been healthy and not Trey's best friend or whatever, I would have been like, whatever, it's their business.
I don't think anybody blinks.
People just like salacious shit. So they're more interested. That's really what this is. People like salacious shit. So the more salacious thing is to talk about how Jada was getting piped down by like a young rapper. Mm-hmm. And, you know, make memes about Will being hurt than to discuss the mental health aspects of it.
Yeah. And I also found it, I guess, interesting is the only word I can think of right now, on the Red Table Talk, how there was a lot of laughter between Will and Jada in discussing this. And not that I expected Will to come on there and flip no tables or nothing like that either, but I'm talking shit because I don't know it all. You know, I saw Van was saying, oh, they're laughing because it feels like, you know, they've moved past it and they can kind of joke about it now. And I didn't take it like that. I looked at it as like they're laughing because it's really uncomfortable and it's fucked up. And there were certain times I didn't think Will was really laughing. Like, he was laughing, yeah. But he wasn't laughing. I think nothing is impossible. But I think when you have this particular type of situation, I think it's harder to get past. Like, I think Will has this thing where he's just like, I'm just not going to get a divorce under any circumstances.
That is his thing. Jada around to that because that was not Jada's thing.
What I was going to say is I felt like that was what a lot of people, you know, I kept saying people, they should just get a divorce. They should just do this. And I just wanted to, they are 50 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
They have a family unit that is 25 years, that's 22 years old, right? Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So when we talk about the friend group, we're not just talking about children, right? We're talking about the fact that Jada's mom and all of the other sort of intertwining family dynamics that come into play. People are not interested in rebooting that.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
People want to know that, like you said, like in this compound, this is the unit.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like, we know we gonna fucking lay down our swords for each other, and this is what we've, you know, decided. No one is out here going to get mad. You know, Will is probably doing whatever he's doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's caught Will, you know, at some fucking restaurant.
There's rumors.
And that's going to be the game.
Sharing cheese fries with somebody.
Yeah, he ain't doing none of that shit. But he ain't get caught doing none of that shit. I think it's interesting that people simply think that when you are intertwined with your families like that, that it is very easy to then to disengage.
Right.
It is not easy to disengage, particularly people who are wealthy, people who know, because let me be clear about something. You know who fucking needs a raise? That staff. Whatever that staff in that house, them niggas need a raise, because they are still traps. Whoever's operating on that compound, they are well compensated. And they are unfucking breakable because this shit would have been on TMZ if it was anybody else a long time ago.
And I think also the Smiths have already modeled to us. And that's why, like, part of me has just kind of been like, have y'all not been paying attention to this family at all? Because they have modeled for us for their entire life in public. They don't do shit the way everybody else does shit. But what they do works for them. Like, I don't necessarily know if Will and Jada have, quote unquote, moved past the incident with August. I do think they've processed the fuck out of it, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think they've discussed the shit out of it. Let me
challenge you on that. We don't have much longer on the podcast, but let me challenge you on that. Because, and I think that's what caught me in that. I assumed that they had processed, and I assumed that they had challenged each other on it a lot. But maybe it was just because they went on camera, but when Jada started speaking on it, like I was saying, like it was kind of like a lot of words, word salad.
Her to be honest with the public. Yeah. Will was saying, you need to speak plainly Will was pushing her to speak plainly because it's like, if you're going to talk about it publicly, talk about it plainly publicly. That wasn't him speaking for them. That was him saying, if you're going to sit here, tell the people what happened, like, for real. and say it plain. Exactly. Will wasn't asking because Will ain't know. Will was like, we gonna be here, motherfucking, if you gonna do the shit, do it. So, like, Jada, what happened? What did you do? What, no, what, and then what? And then, so that was, like, more, like, he even said, he was like, I'm gonna play the Jada role. He was like, if you brought yourself to the table, I'm gonna be you. He said that. So he was like, that was him drawing her out for the audience, for the viewing audience, for the public, for whatever. Okay. I think that what we've seen when that family is together, including Jada's mom, with whom you have to remember, like, she had a very estranged relationship with coming up, including when she sat down with Cherie at one point, like, yep, they have reached a certain level of, you can't fake the kind of transparency they show each other. You can't, especially with the kids, between the kids and them. So whatever they figured out, they figured it out for them. It might not be what works for your marriage. It might not be what works with your kids. It might not be what works for your partnerships. But for whatever it's worth, they got to the brink and they realized we're better together. This unit, like Sean said, that we have is worth preserving. It just has to look like we want it to look, rather than what conventional norms say it should look like. And they've said that. Like, they literally said, we've gone through everything in our relationship, everything. We've gone through every kind of betrayal imaginable. They said that too. We've each betrayed each other every kind of way imaginable. They said that last year. And divorce is now a non-option. It is not an option. So for all these other people projecting their own shit on it, I'm like, you haven't been paying attention. Like, you just haven't been paying attention. Because for them, this shit is years old. We're just catching up, you know?
But I think I think the issue is that this particular situation, and what I think you saw in Will, and I'm just playing armchair, you know, therapist here. I think what you saw with Will was that this was a very specific thing that they had to address. It was no longer vague. It was no longer a controlled message, right? Mm-hmm. It was a outside message, and they recognized that they didn't have, like, this kid could say a bunch of things. And
they had to get control of the narrative.
They had to. And what you saw, what it looked like to me, was that you saw a guy that was kind of like, almost like, I fucking told you. Like, yeah, I told you.
Right, right.
This was going to fucking happen. I told you this wasn't it, Chief. And you kept, you know, because, listen, again, I don't think that this was something that was just, the kid came on a Monday and they were, you know, fucking around on Tuesday, right? Like, I don't think it was that. I think it was, I definitely get the sense that she has a connection to people that she feels are looking for help and guidance. That is a connection for her. And I think it kind of, you know, that sort of snowballed into this sort of attraction and so on and so forth. But I think what we saw from him was like, I hate that I got to sit here and deal with what I told you.
Right. It was the public. I think part of the discomfort was the publicness of it. Because again, like we've all said, this is a couple, this is a family for whom rumors abound, but there's never been any real dirt. Right? Like, there's been plenty of rumors. No actual real dirt. So for them to be a big-ass 50 years old, for them to be at this point in their marriage where their family life is center stage, and to have to address this, that, I think, was the annoying and exasperating part. It was like, I can't believe we got to talk about this shit. And that was the annoyance, I think, even in Will's voice, because he was like, because Black Twitter has decided it's their business. You know what I mean? Right. So it's like, right.
I don't mean to, but I'm saying this too. You guys don't get to, like it's for the Smiths. You don't get to do that. You don't get to build your marriage. You don't get to make your marriage a brand. You don't get to sell that shit, and you don't get to invite people into your lives and then decide when they are no longer welcome. Okay, yeah. That is unfair to use that as a tool to like my nigga. No, all of this was what y'all sold.
Yeah,
and y'all sold it. Hook, line, and sinker. Okay, yep. The whole Red Table talk is based on this therapeutic person, mm-hmm. sort of this coming to Jesus conversation, right? Like these accountability conversations, and that was a tool, and this is what you guys use for your marriage and in your lives, okay? So when you invite people in to do all of that, and you make your marriage a part of that, then you don't get to pick and choose. You just don't. And I understand, like, look, it's uncomfortable, and I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying that he should feel good about having to go out there and sort of message this. But, yo, man, this is what comes with the territory.
Yeah, yeah. I got one last thing to say, and then we're going to wrap up. The one thing that, I don't see everything, so I don't know what's happening. But the one thing that I haven't seen addressed at all is Jaden. Jaden brought this boy in here who was his friend. His friend starts fucking his mom and almost causes their marriage to disintegrate. Like, I haven't, and it kind of now looking backwards, maybe some explains some of the erratic behavior that Jaden's had over the past couple of years, because who knows how he's processing it and how he's dealing with it.
I feel like Jaden was very explicit to keep his name out their mouth. No, that's possibly, my guess.
But I'm saying, just think about what a kid of that age is dealing with. Like, yo, this my boy was fucking my mom, like, and fucking my mom's like regularly. Like, that's a lot to handle. Like, I hope.
I agree with that.
Some type of therapy, and I hope he's working his way through this, because that's tough. Like, in the hood, that's gonna be a beatdown. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, that's gonna be ugly. You know, it's gonna be a mess. So I just wanted to say shout out to Jade, because this has got to be tough, especially now that this is going public. It's got to be tough for him to deal with.
Yeah, it coming public, because he's probably even like, y'all, god damn it. I do feel like in the Smith household, the kids can be like, y'all motherfuckers, we told
y'all.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, like, they're definitely expressing to the parents.
I see Willow, too. I can't just exclude her, too. Like, she's around. Like, I'm sure she knew August as well. Like, they are both probably like, what the fuck, man? Like, right. What are you doing, huh? So I just wanted to mention that, the piece to the Smith children, because it's a lot to handle. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Stay safe out there. Don't go to Florida. Don't go to Texas. Don't go to Georgia. Don't go to Alabama.
I can't even go to South Carolina and see my mama, because they numbers going
up. Yeah, don't go to South Carolina. Don't go to Los Angeles. Jesus. Florida's cases alone are dwarfing countries. Like,
it's craziness.
Unbelievable. Miami's becoming like the epicenter. Like, so please be safe out there. Wear your mask. Social distance.
All that.
Stay in the house if you can. Watch more TV. And be safe. Pray for Nye out in Westbury.
Yeah.
Pray for bro going in his pool in the back.
Yo, did you finish your swimming lesson, Sean?
Getting water in his face in the panic.
Yeah. I did my adult swim class. That was last year.
Are you good now? You good now?
I mean, look, I mean, I'm still going to put a vest on. I was deep.
Right. I'm all right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not a, listen. I
You're not scared of it like you were.
If someone asked me, yo, could you swim? I would still say no, and I would still put my vest on. I do feel confident that I can survive if I fall into the water. I don't think I'm going to, like, you know, panic as much. But
yeah, but that half the thing with swimming is the fear of the, if you're not.
The biggest,
yeah.
The beginning, the class that we took was, like, specifically designed around people who had fear of water. Like, it wasn't like, hey, I'm not scared. It was like, yeah, motherfuckers had trauma, they had issues, and it was a part of that process. But we got to the point where I swam in like 7-8 feet of water. Like, I mean, it was like,
yeah, you could
drop. Yeah, like, I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be this fear, because if you hit that water and you're panicking, it's going to be all bad. But if you hit that water and you got a level of comfort, you know, you can kind of, you know, slow your thoughts down and figure out what you need to do.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. So, we're going to wrap it up on that note. Inca, I'll be looking for you in the next couple weeks.
Poor Inca, we'll see y'all later. A fourth member of the show again.
All
right. Later, y'all.
All right.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. and follow us on Twitter at Pop Life Podcast. Talk to you next week.